how I prepare for these things. I get my mind real blank. I can't. I found out over the years, an old man told me one time, says, there's three thoughts an alcoholic gives at any one time. What he's thinking about, talking about when he's sitting in the chair, what he talks about when he gets up here, and when he sits down, where he thinks about what he should have said. So it doesn't do any damn good. First time somebody asked me to speak, it was at a 10-minute warm-up speaker. So in my infinite wisdom, I got me some 3x5 cards, and I wrote some stuff on about 10 of them. Had them in the sack, went to my sponsor, showed them to him, and threw them in the trash can. Why'd you do that? You're not going to talk about none of that anyway. There's no sense in doing that. Well, to start out, I've been sober half my life. I'm 66 years old. I've been sober 33 years. My sponsor told me to remember the day I quit. I had my last drink about 9:30 Saturday morning, August 9th, 1975, in a White Horse Bar on National Avenue in National City, California. I got up and walked out. I've been there since 6 in the morning. The night before, I was in Long Beach, and I drank my way down to PCH. For those of you who don't know, Pacific Coast Highway. I don't know how I got there. I really don't know how I got to National City. I didn't live in National City. I lived in Sierra Vista, which is north of San Diego instead of south. And come 9:30, I had enough. I got up and walked out. I didn't tell my wife about it because she put me in rehab twice already, and she didn't believe much of what I said. I could point to that wall and say it's white, and she'd say it's black. But she wasn't going to believe what I said. She wasn't going to believe anything I said, and I don't blame her. I was a jackass when I drank. I was a jackass when I thought about drinking, and when I was drinking, when I was coming out of it. That's just the way Gary was. I have no idea when I had my first drink. I hear people say, well, I started at 4, I started at 5. You'll hear the 13 kicked around a lot by a lot of people. I don't know if that's a rite of passage between a teenager or what. It wasn't for me. I have no idea when I started. I know it really started getting bad. I went to Navy in 1959. My first duty assignment was Riverine Forest, Vietnam. I was on PBR. And when I got there, I thought I'd landed in heaven. It was less than 70 cents for a quart of booze. And I could drink all I wanted, as often as I wanted. They didn't care if I was drunk on the boat. They didn't care if I was sober on the boat. The only thing they cared about was my body being on the boat. That's it. Because of the group that I was with, you know, I saw a lot of crap. In 24 years I spent in the Navy, 7.5 was either in country or off the coast of Vietnam. And then when I finally did get to Alcoholics Anonymous the last time, see, I went through rehab twice before I ever decided to quit. But when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and some jerk stood up here and said, all you got to do to win this is surrender. I didn't understand that. It made totally and completely no sense to me at all. My dad was killed in the Philippines in World War II. Never met the man. I was raised by my stepfather. He was some kind of gunner for the Army and Bougainville, Guadalcanal, places like that during World War II, which wasn't uncommon. But he became a wildcat oil well driller and went all over the world with my mother, so I was raised by my grandfather and grandmother. My grandfather, Chiricahua Apache. My grandmother was born and raised in Germany. I was taught at an early age, men do not cry. Men do not admit weakness. And then this jackass stands up there and says, all you got to do is win is surrender. I understand that. See, I went from TBRs, and we took some guys upriver, and I found out they were making more money than me, so I volunteered for what they did, underwater demolition. Then Navy SEALs come along about 1964, and I said, well, I don't really want to do that until I found out they made double what I was making. See, the only reason I wanted all that was for more booze. because I had, at that time, well, when I finally quit drinking, I had five ex-wives, and it cost a little money to support them. In the way they wanted to be supported by the government and me. But, once I quit, people were telling me that everything is going to get better. I will tell you, everything will get different. Everything will get different real fast. As long as you listen. You'll hear somebody stand up here or at other meetings say, if you want what we have, do what we do. And the first thing in your mind is, well, how do I do that? Open your ears and listen to what the people say. You do what we do. When I get up in the morning, I pray. When I first sobered up and I was on a Navy ship, I was in a compartment that there was 110 men that slept in that room. Pretty good size. It had a head over there with about 20 calls in it. You didn't get up and go in there and try to pray because there was 80 guys in there trying to shit, shower, and shave. You didn't do that. And I told my sergeant, he says, throw your shoes under your bunk. I said, what do I want to do that for? Because when you get up in the morning, you got to get down on your hands and knees to get the damn shoes, say a quick prayer. You do the same thing at night when you put them there. Don't throw them. Push him under there. And then he had me doing something, I didn't like what Gary looked like. Gary repulsed me. So he told me, I want you to look in the mirror every morning and say, I love you. I said, Jesus, hey, give me a break. I got to do this in front of all these men. And after about a week, he asked me, he says, how's that going? I said, going great, because you're not doing it, are you? He says, well, get up before everybody else and sneak in there and do it. So I did. I would whisper, I love you, very quietly. And then later on, when I became comfortable with Gary, it doesn't matter. I can tell people that I love myself because things have changed over the years. When I started doing the steps, I was very adamant about doing the steps. So my sponsor, when do you want to do this? He says, well, let's do it on Wednesday. I said, okay. So I knew where he lived. I showed up at his house. I had my big book. Had my 12x12. I had me a big binder of paper. I had about four or five pencils and an eraser. And I showed up at his house and I says, let's start. And he says, what do you got written down? I said, nothing. He says, well, I'm not doing it for you. He says, you go home, get into the book, read it, start writing about it, and then we'll talk about each one of them. But I'm not doing it for you. So I went home and I wrote a little bit. Went back there and said, that ain't enough. I don't want to talk to anybody anymore. And that's the way he treated me. He told me that if you have a problem or think you have a problem, call me. I don't care what time of day or night it is. I said, okay. In the back of my mind, I said, okay, smart ass. Come 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm calling. So I call him up 2 o'clock in the morning, man. But for 3 or 4 minutes, I'd bitch, moan, and complain about something. Whatever I thought was bothering me. And he'd say, it's on page 162 of the big book, and he'd hang the damn phone up. So I go get my big book, and I'd start reading. I'd read 4 or 5 pages before I realized I didn't have a damn thing to do with anything I said to him. So I called him up again. He's full of the same crap. And I asked him one time, I said, why did you do that to me? He says, got you read the damn big book, didn't it? No. No. I had to learn to learn. I had to learn to be open-minded. I had to learn to absorb what was said at these meetings. I was fortunate. Eight and a half years that I was in the Navy, I was sober. And for that period of time, for 5 years, I was, my collateral duty was drug and alcohol counselor. The last 3 and a half, I ran the live-in program out of the Naval Air Station Lemoore. professional drug and alcohol counselor. I tried to do that on the outside, but they don't pay enough. Because when I sobered up, I learned that I like to have stuff. And in order to get that stuff, when you're sober and you're honest, you got to pay for it. And in order to pay for it, best get your ass a job that pays some money. You know, I went to work for one place right after I retired, and they wanted to pay me right at $800 a month. That wasn't enough to put diesel in my damn truck, let alone be a counselor and feed a family. I became a blackout drinker toward the end of my drinking. I remember one time I started drinking in November in Long Beach. The next thing I remember, I was on a parade ground in Vietnam, and a Marine general was pinning a medal on my chest. That was February 18th. That's the next thing I remember. I read about what I did, and it's like I go to the bookstore, buy a novel, and read about the exploits of somebody. Not heroic, just somebody. And I read about that, and I'm detached from it. I understand that everybody said that I did that. But I also understand, I don't remember. I don't remember a damn thing about it. But I do remember after that was over, these guys came up to me, patted me on the back. See, I didn't know where my clothes were at. I was in uniform, but I didn't know where I was supposed to go. I followed them. We went over to the Quonset hut, went in there, they were all changing clothes, and they said, your locker's right there, why don't you change clothes? Okay, and we went in town, got drunk. You would think after, what, 3 months blackout that you wouldn't drink? That's the insanity of the disease. The insanity of the disease kept me there, kept me doing crap like that. I'd go out for a loaf of bread, come back 2 weeks later. You never would get the bread. It costs money. I'd been sober about 6 months. My wife was pregnant. She was supposed to have a cesarean. And she started bleeding. She told me that. So I rushed her to Balboa Naval Hospital. And the doctor asked me, he says, you got any kids at home? I said, yeah, I got a two-year-old at home. He says, go home and take care of him. Well, on the way, in my infinite wisdom, I've been sober about 6 months. My infinite wisdom told me I needed a beer. I needed a beer. I stopped at a beer bar I'd never been to in my life, went in, sat down, ordered a beer. Bartender's went way down there, ordered a draft beer, was on his way back when I got him walked out. Because God did for me what I couldn't do for myself at that point in time. I looked behind that bar, usually got a mirror so he looked for himself. What I saw was the sign that said, the AA meeting's around the corner. And I got up and walked out. Now, I don't know for sure that that thing is there. I never went back to check it out. But that's what Gary saw. That's why I say God did for me what I couldn't do for myself at that point in time. He's done other things like that in my life. Football season reminds me of things like that. I used to be an adamant San Diego Chargers fan. I knew every player on the team. I knew their statistics. I knew all that crap. I followed it vehemently. And I was sitting there one day watching a game. Hadn't been in a meeting in about 3 years. And my wife walked in and had the guts to stand between me and that television set. She held up a pair of her underwear. I said, what the hell are you doing? She said, if you ever plan on getting in these again, you best get your ass to a meeting. I turned the TV off and I went to an AA meeting. Today I do watch football, but I'm not like that anymore. See, that game was being played on the East Coast to start with. I'm out here in California. How the hell can I have anybody to do with that game? I can't. I can't even go to the stadium and yell because it's back there. But in my mind, I could change it. I get into things like that in my mind. You know, I'll be driving along and KF radio starts playing in my head. Those of you who don't understand what that is, KFUCK. That radio station and play in my head in a microsecond, and it will screw me up. And I told my sponsor about it. He said, change the station. Something real logical. But Gary didn't look at it that way. I didn't feel that I could change that station. He says, get numbers. This is before cell phones, so I had to stop at a pay phone to call. Or I had to run back home. Or I had to go someplace where I could find a phone to call. And I got to where I was doing that. When that radio station started playing in my head, I call someone. Because I know what Gary's track record is. I can have one, but I never stopped at one of anything. I had five extra. Well, I got six. I'm married to my sixth wife. Been married to her 38 years. Why she stuck with me that long, I have no idea. I'm not the biggest catch in the world. I realize that. You know, people ask me how I'm doing. I got this little steel, good-looking, young, debonair, kind, courteous, reverend, retired American sailor. That's what I am. But if I don't keep saying that, then I'm not going to believe I'm a good guy. When I got to doing the steps, and I did the first three steps, I felt better. And I heard people at meetings say, well, when you do the fourth and fifth step, you're going to feel that much more better. Because when you do the fourth step, it's like you got a sea bag, and you're filling it full of crap. You're filling it full of crap. In order to get rid of that sea bag, you do the fifth step. So I started writing my fourth step. It took me about probably 2.5-3 weeks. Wrote it all out, and I read it several times. Hid it so that nobody's going to find it. These people that leave it out for their wives or husbands to find, they're stupid. Or just plain stupid. Because there's a thing, and you know, one of the steps says, except when that hurt them or others, remember, we are one of the others. You don't go to your next door neighbor and say, I was banging your wife, but I was drunk when I was doing it. Glad to get your ass shot. So, what I did, I thought what I'd written down was so bad that I had to go tell somebody that I would never see again in the rest of my life. So I went to El Centro on a Friday night, found a meeting. And there was an old guy sitting there. He was about, probably about my age right now. He's probably in the 60s, somewhere in there. And he had a patch on one eye and a wooden leg. And at that hour and a half meeting, he smoked a pack, or almost a pack, of non-filtered Camel cigarettes. Coughed, spit, and sparted through that old meeting. I knew that sucker was going to die. Smart, right? So after the meeting, I said, I got my fourth step here, and I need to do a fifth step. Can I do it with you? He said, yeah. So we went in, it was like a clubhouse type thing. We went into the room and back, had some coffee in there, and I started going over and discussing, and I'm reading along, and all of a sudden I hear a snoring, and I look up, that son of a bitch went straight. See, it doesn't say that the person that I tell this to has to accept everything and judge me on any of it. What that book says is I have to do it. They don't have to like it. They don't have to not like it. All they have to do is listen. Basically, it's there. So we got to go on, and I got finished, and he says, is that it? And I says, well, yeah. He says, where's the good part? What do you mean the good part? He opened up the book and he read the damn step to me. Nothing in there says immoral inventory. It says amoral inventory. But we, as alcoholics, usually put all the bad stuff down. The immorality, the cheating, the chasing, the crap. We usually put that stuff down. He says there's nobody 100% wrong. Write it down. So I just started to tell him. He said, no, write it down, then tell him. So I did. Got done with that and left. It took a while for me to absorb what I had done, to lose that bag of crap that I had been carrying around. And now it's gone. That's the first fifth step. Those of you who are new, saying, boy, I got that fifth step done, and I'm done for life. I got a rude awakening for you. You're going to do a whole lot more because you're going to start to remember a whole lot more because some of your friends are going to tell you some things that you did and all of a sudden, oh, I did that. Yeah, you did that. I did that. So I've done many since then. And it's important to do that. Then you get going into the other stuff, making amends wherever possible. You know, my shortcomings, I still got shortcomings. I try to work on them as often as I can on a daily basis. It doesn't always work that way. You know, promptly admit when I'm wrong. Yeah, sometimes that's 2 minutes, sometimes it's 3 weeks. But I'm better at it because I don't strike back out to hurt someone anymore. I used to do that. I talked to my sponsor. I've got five sponsors. Three of them died on me. I didn't fire them. I still have two that are alive. One of them was a female. And there's a very special reason that I had that woman for my sponsor. She's an ex-madam, had about 30 years sober. And I needed someone to help me to understand my feelings toward women. See, I only went after the good-looking women. The one with perfect legs. The perfect legs on a woman to me was to have feet at one end and something else at the other, and I did not have a foot fetish. That ain't right. I did not treat them as a human being. I treated them as something that was there to serve me, and that's crap. No one is here to serve me. I'm not here to serve anyone either. Only Gary. As long as I stay sober and I work on myself, I can get a little bit better. As long as I help others, I can get a little bit better. I can give away what's been given to me. Alcoholics Anonymous steps were given to me freely. They cost me a damn thing. These people as well said, well, I spent $20,000 to go to rehab, and all they did was take me to AA meetings, and now they won't give me my money back. Sorry about that. I know we're all stupid for a little time. Anyway, get back to the steps. When I got around to doing amends, three of my ex-wives died. They didn't die while I was married to them. They died afterwards. And part of my fourth step, I went back to my sponsor later and went through some things, rewrote them, explained them to him, doing kind of a fifth step. He said, you need to make amends. Well, what I did, he wanted me to make a list of all people that had harmed me at first. So, that's going to be a great list, man. I wrote down, I had two pages. He says, keep that, because you're going to have to make amends with them people. You know, I won't make amends with them for. They're the ones, you know, that did wrong. We'll discuss that later. And we did. And when I became a little clearer up here in the head, I realized it wasn't them that did wrong, it was me. Well, anyway, he said, I got to make amends for those women. I said, they're dead. He said, you need to find their grave and go make amends for them. 75 years, three states. And I went to each one of them, stood there, and started to make amends. Started to, at first, my first amends, I apologized. That's crap. I can't apologize for anything. But what I can do is let them know how I feel today about what I did then. Most of what I did then, I'm very sorry for. And that's not an apology. That's a reality. All three of them that I started out on my feet, making amends to them, and I ended up on my knees crying. And then a few weeks later, I went to Idaho. That was in, the first one was in Nevada, the next one was in Idaho, and the next one was back in California. It took a while for that to feel good to me. I have children by three women and one hooker in the Philippines. Part of the disease, I can say, it's part of my being a sailor, part of my being a jackass, is what it was. 4 years ago, I got to spend a birthday with my oldest daughter. It was her 43rd birthday. first birthday I ever spent with that girl. The first one. I wasn't there when she was born. When she was born, I was in Vietnam. I got back, she was 18 months old. Wasn't a baby to me. She's walking around. Talking. That wasn't my baby. That marriage lasted about another, oh, 5 or 6 minutes. Not very long. Because, you know, what I thought a woman should do when I came back from overseas, even though I didn't call, wrote very seldom, didn't keep in contact, when I got back, they had better be on a pier, naked, with their legs spread, waiting for me because I'm the great thing coming back. Bullshit. I was a drunk, coming back to get drunk. And I would end up, before I left, with another wife. You know, I would meet you and propose to you. It's like that new commercial on where a guy meets a girl in a place that can I call you before she's walked out the door, he's calling her on a cell phone, asking her to dinner, hands her that, and then his parents show up, it's Mr. One. You know, everything starts that quick. That was Jerry. That was the way I was. You know, if you rejected me, I'd be over there to her in about a microsecond. Getting ready, you know. I keep going around until I found one, and there's always one that's drunker than I am that's going to accept what I'm saying. And we all know that. Especially late at night, because we all get beautiful. We're all Brad Pitt, we're all Angelina Jolie, we're all whatever you want to call it. Whatever you think good looking is, we're that. Well, I'm not that anymore. The more I work at this program, the more I realize that life is good. Now, in the last, I didn't go to a doctor. I retired from the Navy in 1983, 25 years ago. 22 years later, I went to a doctor. He told me, well, there's a little bit something wrong with you. Your blood pressure's a little high. You're going to take this medicine or that. And me and my infinite wisdom, I took that bottle of medicine, didn't take no more. He said, how come you didn't get it refilled? Well, you didn't tell me to. Bullshit. I had it in my mind there was nothing wrong. Well, today, because of that, my kidneys don't work. 3 days a week, I go for dialysis. I get hooked up to a blood machine in this vein right here. And I'm laying there for 3 hours while I'm pumping some in and pumping some out. And if you don't know what that's like, you put it back in you between 1 and 2 degrees colder than when it goes out. And you get cold. I don't care what time it is. And if they take too much out, at first they did, because it's a trial process for them to learn my body to need to learn what they're doing. And they're measuring the kilos. Said, well, we took 4 out. Well, I'll take 4 pounds. 4 kilos is damn near 9 pounds. I lost 9 pounds in 3 hours. And those of you who want to go on a diet, it looks good. Well, I don't know. They say ways to do it. I don't know about the good. But I'm still doing that. I got kids lined up to go get tested for a transplant. I'm on the bottom of the list because of my age. I'm on the bottom of the list because I'm on the bottom of the list. I'm in California. California is a 5-year wait. Phoenix, Arizona is a 12-month wait. But I ain't going to Phoenix, Arizona in the summertime. It's hot enough here. I ain't going down there. So I can live with it. I went to Hawaii in August. But before I went there, I said it. At first, I thought, when I first started doing dialysis last December, it was like somebody strapped a rubber band on my butt and nailed it right to the middle of my cervix. Because I could go for a little while and come back, go for a little while and come back. And then somebody told me, well, you can go other places. You just got to call them up and tell us where it's at, and we'll set it up for you to have dialysis there. Oh, you can do that? You know. Mine don't work that way. So I got set up, and when I was in Maui, they set me up with a place. The condo that I stay in is right around the corner. I walked up the corner about a half a mile to the dialysis place and walked back. Over here, I got to drive just 10 miles, you know. And it worked out all right. And I can go other places. They have cruises where they set it up, and they have dialysis machines on the cruises, and they're doing it all day and all night long for the people that are on the cruise. You know, when things like that first happen, you don't investigate. What I'm trying to say is, if I was still drinking, I wouldn't investigate shit. They tell me something like that, and he has to go. A few months ago, I went to, my wife kept complaining I had a rope right here. And she just didn't like the look of it. When a woman doesn't like the look of something, she will bug you to death until you do something about it. Well, I finally went to the dermatologist, and he said, well, we'll take a sample of it and see what it is. About a week and a half later, one of his receptionists calls me up and tells me it's cancer. Immediately in my head, I'm going to die. Now, granted, I only been sober 32 and a half years at that point, so I didn't know a damn thing about it. One of the things that bothered me, there was a friend of mine in Southern California about 2 years ago. They told him he had a melanoma on his head. He was 6'6", weighed about 265. 6 months later, at 158 pounds, he died. Because they kept cutting and never caught it. And that hit me. I went to a meeting that night and I told him, man, I got this cancer and this and this and this and this. And I got to thinking about it that night. I only talked to his reception. So the next Friday morning, I was sitting there at the doctor's office well before they were open. And when he came up, I said, you got to tell me what this is all about. So we went in the office, he got out these graphs and all this. He said, I'll cut it out here right now if you want to. It's going to take a couple of minutes and it'll all be done. You think that'll be it? He said, yeah. It ain't that deep. So I told him what his receptionist said, well, she's moved. I told her cancer. She's rushing. Damn, they're calling me to go somewhere. So, even though I've been sober a long time and think that I've got things together, I got to revert back. I had to go back to that meeting and apologize to people. Because of the way I made it sound, 15 or 20 minutes from now, I'm going to die. My grandmother and grandfather both died of cancer. And Larry got in Southern California, like I said, it took him 6 months. I mean, he basically wasted away to nothing. I weigh 160 pounds, but I don't start out in 265 years. Doing these things on a daily basis, I still write. I write down my feelings. I don't keep them as often as I should. People still bug the hell out of me. My oldest son, I haven't seen in 4 years. He's somewhere in Southern California. The last time I seen him, he called me a no good son of a bitch. He got on the meth, he got on the booze, and he turned into a complete jackass. In other words, he turned into Gary. He turned into exactly what Gary was. And he left. He lost a brand new house. He gave up 2 children. He gave up a wife. He lost a brand new truck. He was building the new Bay Bridge up there in Northern California. And he was, the straight time pay was $32 an hour. And he was working 84 hours a week. And he figured out that overtime is what it did. He wants to, no big deal. He gave zero to his wife. He gave zero for upkeep and maintenance of those 2 kids. And now the state of California is after him, and he's blaming his ex-wife. See, that's Gary all over again. I blame my ex-wife for everything. I didn't understand until later that they got rid of something that wasn't very good. They got rid of me. And when they got rid of me, their life, I'm assuming, got a lot better. 1978, I was sober 3 years, and I did a single living soul. I had a hard time trusting myself to get to work in the morning. I had a hard time trusting myself to do my job. My job was an engineering duty officer on a naval ship. I was in charge of the engine room. I was in charge of quite a few people. I was in charge of the fire room. Fire room is where the boiler is, and it makes the steam air, send it over the steam and all that crap. They worked for me. They did what I told them to do. And if I didn't feel like doing work, it didn't matter. Things were still going to happen. I was in charge of it. And when I got to the Philippines in 1978, I was walking down the street on the base, and this guy walking toward me was with four or five other Navy SEALs. And I ran up and hugged that man. And he hugged me back. And them other SEALs stood back and looked at him. What the hell is this crap? Probably where it came up to. Harry and I have been through rehab together 4 years prior to that. Harry and I really sobered up. We both drank and used after rehab. I found out later, his sobriety date was 2 days before mine. He got sober on August 7th, I got sober on August 9th. So we've been sober almost the same amount of time, 3 years. And we started talking. We started spending time together. And over the next 2 weeks, we see each other every day. We talk every day. We went to meetings in Subic Bay and around there. There are work. I don't know if there's any more. There were meetings every day and every night. And we went to them and we talked and we got together and we shared. And we came up with a way to trust another human being. I do not suggest anybody in here do it the way I did. We went over to QB Point, which is the air base there. We went up in an airplane. First time we went up, had two parachutes, both of us jumped out. Went back on an airplane, got two more parachutes. Next time, we went up, Harry jumped out with two chutes, I jumped out with none. On the way down, he handed me the parachutes, we went down. We went back on the airplane, we did it the opposite way around. The last time, I jumped out of an airplane. But, see, I had to get trust with another human being in order to look in the mirror and trust myself. That's the way I did it. Because I'm a jackass. Because there's always somebody, you know, you either do this or you jump out of airplanes out of parachutes. I'll show you, sucker. I can do it. Stupid. You know? When I was in Hawaii, they got bungee jumping over there. My wife thinks I'm nuts. I'm 66 years old. Guy rubber band on you, try to jump off a bridge. My kids think I'm stupid. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I still am. You know, if I go to dialysis 3 days a week, I still do crap like that. I still like to scuba dive. I still like to, you know, snorkel, do all this crap. I never could surf. I don't understand why. I never could do it. I mean, watch these little kids out there do it. It really pissed me off. When I first sobered up, I didn't have much money, but I had to have something to do with my hands. So I went and bought this factory model of a 1956 Ford pickup. And I'm going to enter this in a contest on building it. I worked on it for almost a month. I chopped it, I channeled it, I put all kinds of custom features on it and everything else, entered it in the contest, came in third place. I'm 33 years old. And I come in third place for a 12 and a 14 year old. Man, I was sick. I went to my sponsor and I'm fishing and moaning and complaining about it. And he looks at me and says, did you drink? I said, no. Did what it's supposed to do. I said, yeah, but. He said, I know, yeah, but. Your only job right now in your life is to not drink. Later on, you'll get into other things. Later on, you'll get into other things. And that's what it's been for me, getting into other things. When I became a counselor, I taught out of this book. I taught out of this book for about 5 years steady. And I asked my sponsor early on why he thought I sobered up. He said, it's real simple. You got the ones that want to. You start to leave. I said, what the hell kind of double talk is that? He said, it's in the book. I said, bullshit, I teach out of that book. It took me 8 years, but I found it in that book. It's on the bottom half of page 109. We get the ones that want to. See, my sponsor never told me something that wasn't in that book that was in that. I'll tell you all kinds of opinions of mine. I don't believe in a slip. I don't believe in a relapse. I slipped and fell down a lot. Never fell in a bad beer and Jack Daniels never fell in my mouth. A relapse, lapse in something means stop. And I'm going to restock something? Bullshit. When I went back out, it was an on purpose. Because on purpose, right here, I had that booze in my mouth long before it was ever there. Now, it might have taken 30 seconds, or it might have taken 30 days. It took what it took. You'll be around enough meetings, and you'll hear people say, well, I went back out, and one of the things that I did, the first thing that I usually hear, I stopped going to meetings. I stopped calling my sponsor. I put the big book under my pillow. Osmosis don't work worth a damn, in case you want. It ain't going to just filter into your head. Well, I read the book. Did you really? When you read that book, make sure you do what my sponsor told me. See, I went back to him and I said, we'll discuss a few things in here. And he said, okay, so we started discussing. Where the hell did you come up with that? It's in the book. He said, no, it's not. And we go through it, and I'll be damn, wasn't in there. He said, oh, I know what your problem is. You're not reading just the black in the book. Well, what the hell does that mean? So you're putting words in there that aren't there. And if you don't know what a word means in there, go get yourself a dictionary and find out what that word means. I didn't think that's very important. My youngest son is in a program. And they asked him to do one of the readings. And he came up with the thing, you know, the result was nil. And he, when he read that, he looked kind of funny. And after the meeting, I asked him, I said, do you know what that word meant? He says, no, I don't have any idea. See, it didn't dawn on me that words that were used in the 30s aren't really used all the time today. And my son is 30 years old. He's never seen dad drunk. Never seen dad drunk. My 32-year-old daughter hasn't either. My 47-year-old daughter never saw me drink or drunk either. But her mother told her what her dad was like. And I do not believe her mother lied to her. Told her what he was like when he was drinking when he was younger. I understand that. And it took a long time for us to get a relationship, for her to understand that I am different today from what I was then. My second daughter, she don't want a damn thing to do with me. And that's her choice. That is her choice. I call her on her birthday once a year. The last 2 years, at least I got a short conversation of it. Before that, phone. You hang up in my ear. That's her choice, because her mother told her what I was like. She'll be 40 in November. So, she lives up there. She's got her own life. I've got two beautiful granddaughters right here. She doesn't want me to see them. There's nothing I can do. I can't force myself on them. My oldest son had, like I said, had two kids that he gave up. It was great. My 11-year-old grandson and I went fishing this last weekend. Damn near threw him in the lake. Damn near did. I caught one fish, he caught six. I said, you catch another one and you're going in. He's 11 years old and he's got about here. And weighs about 210 pounds. And they want him to play football, and he says, should I? He's bigger than everybody else, and might as well. And I've got, you know, other grandkids. But, you know, weeks ago, my son, my youngest son's wife, brought my granddaughter over for someone to babysit while she went. So I said, well, Mary, you're not here tomorrow. She said, that's all right, I trust you. I started to cry. Sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? But if you knew where I came from, you might understand that. If you knew where I came from, and a lot of people in here really understand that, because of the change that we have gone through, the metamorphosis. It's like a butterfly cocoon, you know, type thing. The end of the cocoon and the metamorphosis happens, and a beautiful butterfly comes out. And that's what we are, in my opinion. It's a beautiful butterfly. And we can continue to do that, we can continue to be that way for the rest of our life, or we go back out. A few months ago, I was walking through one of these stopping aisles, and I'm walking along, and I see this, it's either Red Dog or Red Fox deer. And I got over 32 years old. Immediately, I wanted to know, I wonder what that tastes like. So I understand that when people have less time and they say, man, I like to have a bit. Well, I knew what it would taste like before I took the next step. Tastes like divorce. Tastes like losing my house. Tastes like losing my truck. Tastes like, you know, going, getting them bracelets. I don't like them bracelets that are hooked together. I don't know about y'all, but I ain't no magician. I can't get out of them like I used to. I'll tell you a story about my youngest son. He got picked up and thrown in the back of a police car and then San Luis Obispo. Handcuffed behind him. He's long, tall, and lanky. Well, they didn't look at his earrings. One of his earrings was a handcuff key. And they left the window down a little bit, but he got out of there. Got his ass beat. He said, ain't doing that crap no more. It's a little levity coming in there. But we do what we have to do. Today, I do what I have to do to stay focused. But sometimes, I just got to sit on my hands. I do a 12-step program. I do a 3-step program. I do a 5-step program. I go to meetings. I have a sponsor. I read the book. I have a conscious contact with a higher power. I don't know what they're doing there. I also do a 3-step program. I can't handle it, God can, I think I'll let it. Without me having a conscious contact with a higher power, I can't even make it. I have to have someone that I can rely on that is bigger, better, and badder than Gary. I have to believe that. And I don't care if God is male or female. What I care about is my idea about what they, what it, he, she does for me. Thank you.